My name is Giovanna Braxton. I am UVA class of 1999, and I'm one of the co-chairs for Black Alumni Weekend, and want to welcome everybody to your session. This is really about the experience of our alumni, about your times on grounds. And so this is really intended to be a very interactive session, but we have recruited some very loyal alumni who've agreed to sit on our panel today. And today, the session will be moderated by an alum as well. A couple of housekeeping notes, again, because this is intended to be highly interactive. We have a couple of current students who are serving as volunteers. And so we're going to have a little Oprah moment. And they're going to walk around the room once we are ready for questions towards the end of the panel. So feel free, we want everyone to make this, again, our experience. We want this to be a very special time to reflect. Remember your time on grounds. Remember those historic things that happened while you were enrolled at the university. And so, again, own the session because this is really intended for you. So hopefully some of our friends will get here. I think Cecil said 300 people signed up for the session, so we're hoping the crowd will grow. So I'd like to go ahead and introduce the moderator for today, who's a very special friend of mine. We met in the trenches at the university through BSA, BSAC, and everything else we did to try and run the university. Dr. Kalila Brown-Dean, she's a 1998 graduate of the University of Virginia, and she's currently the Peter Strauss Family Assistant Professor of Political Science and African American Studies, and a resident fellow of the Institute for Social and Policy Studies, and a research fellow at the Macmillan Center for International Area Studies at Yale. She has served as a political analyst, advisor, and commentator for the Congressional Black Caucus, CNN, PBS, NPR, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, Crisis Magazine, the Comcast Network, and several governmental agencies, community organizations, and international media outlets. Professor Brown-Dean's work stands at the intersections of law, politics, and policy, with specializations in American politics, mass political behavior, and political psychology. Her forthcoming book with Yale University Press, Once Convicted, Forever Doomed, Race, Citizenship, and Civil Death, explores how disenfranchisement and other acts of civil death diminish the political standing of African Americans. It is my esteemed pleasure to welcome our moderator for today, Dr. Kalila Brown-Dean.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me begin by thanking Cecil and Giovanna for all of their hard work and bringing us together today. There have been a lot of conversations to get to this point, and I really appreciate them being willing to do this amid their own professional and personal commitment. So thank you to both of you. I'm very pleased and honored to moderate this discussion. And seeing you this morning, I'm not just honored, but I'm indeed inspired to be back on grounds and to think about the contributions that Black students have made on this university, to think about what it was like to be one of very few to now be one among many. And so for me, it is an honor to be a part of that experience and to have the opportunity to talk about it today. I think that this occasion and starting off the weekend in this way is very important, because it allows us to come together and honor the achievements of those who have gone before us, people like our first panelist, PJ Morant. But it's also a way for us to claim now in the present what we want to see for future generations of Black students at this very fine institution. And so I want to thank you who are here today for allowing that to happen and being a part of that discussion. We have a very talented group of alums who represent the broad spectrum of the Black student experience at UVA. And so I want to begin by briefly introducing them and then getting right to the heart of our discussion. So our first panelist is Paulette Morant. She has the unique dual distinction of having entered UVA as the first class of women to enter the university as first-year students. She was also among the first large group of Black students to enter into the university, with 93 students in that entering class. She excelled as a member of the field hockey team and as a classical music announcer for WTJU. She currently serves as an adjunct instructor of secondary education and student teaching at Wake Forest University. Gary Flowers is an analyst, academic, and activist. and he is the executive director and CEO of the Black Leadership Forum. It is one of the most foremost organizations of bringing together civil rights groups and service organizations across the United States, all united around the same purpose of empowering and uplifting our communities. Gary co-founded the Oliver W. Hill Black Pre-Legal Association, and in 2001, he received the Outstanding Alumni Award from the Walter Ridley Scholarship Fund. Dr. Zuri Allen was a Lawn resident who translated his very extensive experience in governance and leadership here on grounds into a distinguished career in higher education. He has enhanced student achievement and development at numerous universities and is now the Director of Admissions and Recruitment at the University of the Virgin Islands. We're so glad that he is here today, taking a little time away as he goes to North Carolina to celebrate the birthday of his son, Saeed. And so we thank you for being willing to do that. Indy Piper is a double who, having graduated from both the college and the law school. Indy prepared for her very distinguished career, law career, by defending students in honor trials and serving on student council. She is currently the Vice President of Business and Legal Affairs at TV1 LLC. Carlos Brown led student life on grounds by serving as student body president. Like Indy, Carlos is also a double who, graduating from the law school as a Dillard Scholar. Carlos is a senior counsel at Dominion Resources Incorporated. Consuelo Kendall earned both a bachelor's in economics and a bachelor's in African and African American studies from the university. She was a member of NSBE, Madison House, and a peer advisor. We see Dean Terry, so I love that that connection continues. Consuelo is an attorney in Washington, D.C. Nicholas Jordan was a distinguished major in political and social thought and serves on the Young Alumni Council of the Alumni Association. Nicholas is a human capital consultant with Deloitte Consulting and also manages Get on the Street, a nonprofit mentoring organization that is designed to encourage minority student achievement in finance, consulting, marketing, and advertising. Please join me in welcoming and thanking our panelists. I want to start our discussion with a very deceptively simple question and get all of our panelists to respond. And then I'll throw out some questions and points and you can jump in as you'd like. And so that first question that I'd like to hear from each of you to answer is, why UVA? So what brought you to the university? And we'll start with Paulette.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I came to UVA not by accident, but if you can imagine that in 1969, senior year of high school, students didn't apply to 10 universities the way they do today. We applied to two or three, and the two I applied to were HI, Hampton Institute, and UVA. I applied to HI at that time because I was from Norfolk, and that was considered one of the best and greatest places, and it still is. It really is. But my mom, who was a science teacher in Norfolk Public Schools, was the one who had let me know about the admission of women to UVA. And you'll laugh about this, all of you UVA folks. I'm from Norfolk. I went to African-American Catholic Elementary School, but I went to Norfolk Catholic High School, which was integrated. Mom said, hey, I read that UVA is taking women. You've got to apply. I said, Mom, absolutely not. Larry Sabatow is applying. I'm not applying. And so, now, Mom remembered Larry as being very active in high school. She said, oh, don't compare yourself to anybody. You know, you just apply and see how you do. I said, okay, but if I get in and if I go and if I don't like it, can I go to HI? She said, sure. Well, in order to see if I could get maybe used to college life in general, I did go to pre-college at Hampton during the summer of 70, thought it was great, came up to UVA and said, not bad. Then my mom said, what have I done? I've created a monster. So she did let me go, but I have to give credit to my mom for making me apply.
Great, thank you.
Well, good morning. Thank you for inviting me. Happy Friday. I came to UVA first because the two choices that I wanted to go to, Williams College had burned a cross on the campus in February of 1981. And I mistakenly thought that they were a racist institution. So I was like, cold, cross, not going to go there. All of my neighborhood and half of Richmond went to Hampton. So I wanted to go to Hampton, but then I said, you know what, I'll just be another one of the Richmond guys at Hampton. So the other three choices, my parents wouldn't let me go to. My father thought Morehouse was too far away. Howard, I would get too wild. I don't know why he thought that. And Chapel Hill was the equivalent of UVA. So I came to UVA, and it was the best decision I never made. So I was glad to be here, and I'm glad to be an alum.
Good morning, everyone. And do know, I still go by Maurice. Back in the day, my name was simply Maurice Allen. Just to tell you briefly, I had to add a new first name in 1999 because I was being mistaken for another Maurice Allen without a middle name who had some very shady experiences, and I didn't want to be I didn't wish to be confused with that person, so I'm not new and improved by going by Zuri now. I'm still Maurice to all of those who knew me then as Maurice and continue to know me as Maurice. But I, too, was looking at Howard, Hampton, Morehouse, and McAllister in Syracuse. But in the fall, correction, in the spring of 1982, Sylvia Terry visited my high school, and that changed everything. She was so warm, she was so gracious, she was so loving in disseminating information about the university to me that I decided I'm going to consider UVA. Came to Fall Fling in fall 1992, saw people like Gary Flowers and others who welcomed me, you know, as a prospective student. And that's why I came to UVA.
Good morning. I really wasn't very exposed. I don't know how that happened because I was pretty, I was a pretty social kid. But anyway, I didn't know that much about colleges outside of Virginia. So I spent my time at JMU and William & Mary, and really, I mean, they were kind of trying to recruit me. I went to a summer program at William & Mary, and so I was kind of heavily recruited by both of those schools. I was also considering Howard, because I grew up in Northern Virginia. But I got a University Achievement Scholarship from UVA. I mean, I applied because my guidance counselor said, you should apply to UVA. So I ended up getting this scholarship, and it was full tuition. And it was kind of like, it's a no-brainer. So I just came. And just like Gary, it was like the best decision I'd never made. Best decision ever.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It was the spring of 92, and a guy by the name of Rodney King had gotten pulled over and beaten on videotape by the LA police. And went to a majority high school. We were 98%, I think, white. And I was one of the three kids and three black kids in the AP classes or honors classes. And they spent all day long, why are they doing this? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing this? And of course, everyone looking at the three of us to speak for the entire community. And, you know, as best as I could, and my colleagues as well, we articulated what, as an African-American, we felt in that situation. And, you know, I wanted to go to Morehouse. I was so ready to go to Morehouse. We were looking at Morehouse. I was looking at Princeton. I was looking at a couple other schools. But I was not going to go to UVA. And I got home that afternoon and realized that although you can't speak for a community, the reality is that only a few of us have the tolerance and to deal with a situation where there's a void of understanding and there's a need for education. And I said, if everyone who has the ability to communicate that message sheltered themselves and went to, you know, the safe place, then how would others be educated? And so I know it sounds profound, but it's true. I said, I got to go to UVA. And so that's how I decided to do that. Now, it didn't hurt that there was an achievement scholarship and Mike Mallory was calling and the other stuff. But that was, I was literally riding on the lawnmower that day, and I told my mom, God spoke to me and told me to go to UVA. But it was the Rodney King thing. So.
I heard a voice.
Good morning, everyone. Why I decided to go to UVA, actually, UVA was kind of a last-minute choice for me. I was very irritated at my mom. She wanted me to stay in the D.C. area, go to Georgetown or University of Maryland, because she wanted me close to home. And I was like, no, I need to get a sufficient distance away from you, you know, adolescence and everything. And one of my friends from high school, Lanisa, she is a year older than me. She went to UVA, and she was like, it's a great school. My mom came with me to visit. It wasn't during spring fling or anything. And I didn't really see a lot of black faces. But at the time, I realized that, you know, going to a historically black college, while there's no problem with it, that's not how necessarily the real world was. And so I came to UVA, absolutely fell in love with the campus, and, you know, it was far enough away from my family, but not too far that I couldn't go home on the weekends, and it was a great school, so that was the reason why I decided to come to UVA.
The reason that I decided to come to UVA, it's still a mystery. I've been trying to figure out how this happened. So I grew up in a small farm town outside of Boston, and I had never even thought of UVA, considered a lot of the schools in the area, but I got a letter in August to come down to Fall Fling. I had no idea. I still do not, to this day, have no idea how I got connected to UVA. I had never done anything related to it. And I came down, and I absolutely fell in love with it. The people were like unlike any I had ever met. The students were warm, welcoming. Everybody was, I mean, tremendously intelligent. So for me, as soon as I got here, as soon as I literally rolled into grounds, I was like, I need to be here. And, you know, the rest was history.
Thank you. So now we all know what it took to get you here to UVA. I wondered if some of you could address what it took to keep you here. What were the resources, the individuals, organizations that really helped you stay?
Hello?
Oh, it's on.
Okay. For me, there are two things that really helped me through. Number one was the peer advisor program. Dean Terry. Very, very, very instrumental in, it just set a certain tone at school. Or this is how it was when I was here. You got in, you got your peer advisor, and it was someone that you could actually call. And then the people that were peer advisors, they didn't just function as peer advisors with that group. It created a sense of community. So it was like Carlos was mentioning when we first got here, Indy used to take care of us. She used to see us in her car and say, hey, do y'all need a ride and pick us up or, you know, cook us dinner? And that's kind of how the community was. And I think it really created a sense of community for us. And then I went on to be a peer advisor. And I, you know, just sought to help people through school. Also, the Office of African American Affairs, I don't know if people realize how important it is to have that, but a lot of schools have nothing similar to that going on at all. And just to have a safe haven and a place to go and deans we can talk to when there are issues that really affect us. And, you know, a lot of places, we would have been at other schools, we might not have had the same opportunity. So both of those were very, very instrumental in helping me through my time here.
And let me echo Indy's comment. Before there was a peer advisors program, there was Dean Terry. She was every peer advisor all in one. And so when I arrived, it was Dean Terry who not only welcomed me, our parents were friends from Virginia State College, now Virginia State University, but it was Dean Terry who welcomed me and nurtured me. But it was also the Office of African American Affairs. There was a gentleman here by the name of Dean William Harris. He was the Dean of African American Studies. There was a cadre of professors, Vivian Gordon, bless her soul. There was a cadre of black professors who said, not only will you stay here, but you will excel and you will do well here. And so we just went over to, and Maurice knows through the summer preparatory program, what we call summer prep, we would go over to the Office of African American Studies, the Luther P. Jackson House, and just hang out and vent. And it was that coping mechanism institutionally that kept us, but it was at the impetus of Dean Terry and other committed faculty members. But I have to say, in a segue back to the first question, part of the reason why I came here, so some of you, you may not know this history. After 1954 Brown versus Board of Education decision, the Commonwealth of Virginia, by way of then Governor Harry Byrd, instituted what they call massive resistance. In essence, we are a sovereign state. We don't have to, you know, succumb to federal interposition. And so therefore, we will nullify federal law and we will just not enforce it. We will do so by canceling and eradicating school districts. We'll just close the schools. Rather than desegregate, we'll close the schools. So my parents had to get their master's at Columbia University in New York, paid for by the Commonwealth of Virginia. Paid for by the Commonwealth. Now, my mother loved it. I mean, she got to hang out in New York. It was an Ivy League school. She got to shop on, you know, Madison Avenue. But how much of a folly is that? And so I wanted to at least parenthetically state that historical note that it was because Virginia would not accept my parents, that my parents said, you're going to accept my boy.
I would like to add to that, without taking up the whole hour, that Gary did not. I feel like I could sometimes when you talk about things like this, because when you think about the generations before you and your parents in particular, you know what they went through, whether they got a full college education or not. I was fortunate that both parents were able to get to go to college, went to Virginia Union University. But just like Gary's parents, my dad wanted to go to grad school in French. He didn't tell me until after I graduated from UVA that UVA is where he would have loved to have applied, but the year was 1955. That was not the right year to apply to the graduate arts and sciences at UVA. So where did he go? Middlebury. I think he got a really good deal. He turned out great. But also, while I'm on the subject of anybody before us, I told Kalila, I felt kind of funny realizing, hey, I'm the oldest one on this panel. She said, don't feel bad like that. She said, feel that you are the most experienced. I said, okay, I'll go for that. However, I do have somebody who is more experienced, my good friend Aubrey Jones, engineering, 1963. So during the question and answer, you got to hear from Aubrey. Another factor, I guess when you say what kept us here, coming in 1970 was the last, 1970 graduation year was the last year of the all-black high school in Virginia. So of the 93 people that came in here, I would say about 50 or 60 of the 93 came from an all-black high school. I'm not sure about that because we used to count each other so much. We counted, okay, how many of us are from Norfolk? How many of us are from Richmond? How many are from Martinsville?
Three.
You know. But I think that was a big factor, too, because for many of my classmates, it was their first everyday experience with integration. It was college, and for many of them, it was the first one in the family to go to university, and it was UVA. And most of us, including me, did not even come to Charlottesville to see UVA until after we got in. After we got in, we're like, oh, yeah, let's go up and take a look. So my dad brought me up here. We're like, oh, Rotunda, really? It looks like that's in the book. Oh, boy. But I think what kept us, and we had a bad attrition rate, and we were before Dean Terry, but she knows all of our history. I would say of the 93 of us, about 52 of us graduated for various reasons. Some people really were afraid. Fear was in there a lot, and it made them really kind of cling and be afraid to step into something that they were unfamiliar with. Or if they stepped into something unfamiliar, they didn't step back in if it wasn't positive. All of us felt like the professors don't think we belong here, we better not do anything stupid. But we did the wrong thing many times. We didn't ask questions. And when we get to the advice part, anybody who asks a question, you are smart. Because I would hear what the professor would say, and he'd say, I assume you all know this, 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 and this. I would run to Alderman after class and spend 3 hours trying to find out what that was instead of just asking him what that was. Now you have it a little bit better, I hope. And now I've taught my students throughout the years, ask questions that prove that you pay attention. Office of African American Affairs, that was something we wanted. The guys who were just a couple of years ahead of us who had come here in a small group of 6 or 12, when we came, they said, oh, good, now we have enough people to go over to the president, Mr. Shannon, and ask for African-American Affairs House, because they had just approved African-American Affairs as a major in 1970. So now we have a core group. We can go over and do this. Of course, I'm talking to Mom on the phone, and she said, how's everything going up there? And I tell her, I said, we're going to see the president to ask him about African-American Affairs. Mom said, no marching, no marching, no, no. But basically, Mr. Shannon was a good listener, and his director of the transition program, which is what many students came through from in the early 70s in the summer, Bill Elwood, God rest his soul, he was a wonderful resource. He kept people who wanted to go home. People were packing their trunks, and we did have trunks back then, Foot Locker. So he unpacked them. He said, look, you are staying. A couple of our older students, not that much older than me, but John Charles Thomas and Lindsay L.D. Britt said, hit the books, hit the books. Lots of people did that. Lots of people did not do that. But it was a very interesting time. And sort of pre-peer advisors, there's a man that named Fred Lumpkin, who was working on his PhD in education, 1973, who organized what we think is the forerunner to peer advising, and he called it the Learning Enrichment Program. And he wanted all of us fourth years by that time to have a first year group. And I shared this with Gary, but I wanted to let you know that in my group that was class of 73, I had Leroy Hassell. He did not need any mentoring at all. But, you know, he's the one who recently deceased Supreme Court Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the State of Virginia. And at that time, he was also a Norfolk person. So we kind of felt like, okay, I had a great group of 5 people as part of this person's PhD dissertation. But I want to pass on to somebody else. But those are some things that kept us there.
Yes.
As everyone has said, the peer advising program was a significant pillar in keeping folks here and helping us be successful. But I want to kind of take it a little bit deeper than that, because I think what Dean Terry did and Dean Turner did and the LPJ House did is they created an environment, and then they coached us, right? They coached us to take ownership of the place. And when you say, well, what kept you here? Well, it was the hope that even if things weren't the way they should have been, that we, through our collective action and engagement, could make them how we want them to be. And so when I think about the generation of students that were there in the early 90s, I hate to say that now, that's what we did. I mean, we met and we said, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, I'm going to do this. And by the time we were in 96, we had the student council, we had the judiciary, we had the student newspapers, and we were able to change the environment. And so it was that opportunity to make that transformation that said, it's worth sticking it out. And I think that's one of the, but that's kind of inbred into the fabric of this university, this whole student self-governance thing. You know, it can be a sword and it can be a shield. And I think we took control of that and said, it's going to be our sword and we're going to use it. You know, so when Dean Canterbury counseled Spring Fling because the BSA hadn't put in, or BSAC had not put in the amplification permit before, we said, fine, student council will do it. Why? Because I had the budget, right? And so we just circumvented every obstacle that would have been a problem for us at the university by taking control of the institutions and using them to make sure it was a safe and welcoming place. The Multicultural Center over in Newcomb, well, that was the class of 96 class gift. Guess who wrote it? So some of us, right? So we were able to do that by being engaged. And that was one of the great things. And we were encouraged to do that by Dean Terry. She knew, she had read all of our files. And so she knew stuff about us. And she was sending me notes. And, well, you ought to do this and think about doing this. And I'm like, how does this woman know? So she got my room tapped or something. But she found what it was, you know, she and others found what it was that made us tick and what potentials we had, and she coached us and mentored us in that direction. And that made all the difference, and that's why I think a lot of us stayed and developed the way that we did.
I just have a few things to add. I actually have a little bit of a different perspective. I agree with the peer advisor program helping me out tremendously in the Office of African American Affairs, but I came in as an engineering student. And when I was here, engineering school and the college, they were quite separate. And so the engineering school had the Office of Minority Programs, and that was run by Carolyn Vallis. And boy, did she help me out, because the first year in the engineering school was a rude awakening for me. The fact that Mrs. Beck went through my calculus course in 45 minutes, I knew I was going to be struggling. And Ms. Vallis not only helped me out, but she helped all of the minority students out in the engineering school. She gave me a job, and she was like, you can work at the front desk and pick up the phones, fine. That's work study. They have the bridge program for entering students, and she did her best to help all of the students who came to her find internship opportunities, you know, speak to various alumni of the engineering school just about, you know, just to further our networking skills. And so she was like a tremendous reason why I was able to get through the engineering school my first year. But also, you know, we're talking about older students. My classmates also helped me get through. Like, that's when I learned the importance of study groups and supporting each other and helping each other out. Like, I would not have gotten through my first year, first semester without Ricky Reed and Charlie Smith. Like, those are my go-to people to study. And, you know, just being open to helping each other out, I think that was really important. But definitely the engineering school, Ms. Vallis and the Office of Minority Programs, they were a very strong support system when I was at UVA.
One of the things that came out here that resonated for me was we spent generations encouraging black students to attend college and telling them that that is the best investment in their future. But for a lot of us, when we came into the classrooms, we didn't see people who looked like us. And for me, the reason I decided to become a professor instead of going to law school and spending lots of my parents' money preparing for the LSAT and Kaplan and everything else was because I had two black professors here at UVA, Matthew Holden and Paula McLean, both of whom have since gone on to other universities, who said to me, what are you going to do to make sure that the next group of black students don't encounter those same challenges that you did? How are you going to change the discourse? And because of them, went into a summer program, learned more about what it meant to actually have a PhD in political science, that, you know, I don't want to be a politician, this is what you actually do with that. And so I think that had a lot to do about that broader culture that you've all talked about at the university of having professors, administrators, staff members who often got us through those moments, who saw you as more than just a number, but really saw you as a whole person and wanted to advance that.
Can I add one thing?
Sure.
Okay, I was waiting to see if any of the other panelists would mention this particular constituency group, but my parents. I succeeded here because failure was not an option, as communicated by Charlie and Gloria Allen. I remember when I started private kindergarten, my father said, you're going to college. I don't know where you're going to college, but you are going. And just knowing that I could not return to small Victoria, Virginia as a failure, not as a failure, but as a disappointment perhaps in having, you know, been admitted to UVA and not succeeding at UVA. Look, I knew when to shut off that party button.
Let me add, I give kudos to my parents as well, and Dean Terry knows them. My parents could not come to UVA because of racial segregation. And so, as I'm known in Richmond, the little flowers boy was going to UVA. And that was not only family, that was Richmond. That was community. I mean, because little flowers boy was going to UVA. Did you hear that? Now, I could not come home. Now, I managed to reluctantly go to a few parties. Reluctantly.
You mean last night?
Yeah, last night. So much so that I had to take 21 hours my last semester. Oh, wait a minute. Here's the real joke. My parents sent out graduation notices in October. So I was like, for real? Okie dokie. And they were like, okay, yeah, we sent the, you know, invitations out. And I was like, yes. 21 hours. But it forced me, that sense of potential shame forced me to graduate on time, but also to do well in those 21 hours. And so I think that our parental influences really have a lot to do with who and what we become.
There's a saying that, you know, I am because we are, and we are because I am. Yeah. And I think for Black students at the university, that's very much the sense, that you being here, you represent those people that you may not have known were praying for you, but got you through those times. And you feel that sort of collective sense of achievement. I also wanted to throw out, all of you participated in organizations that traditionally were very underrepresented in terms of Black student involvement. So whether it was student council, whether it was living on the lawn, being active in Madison House at the time, did you feel that being a Black student affected your involvement in those organizations? Did you encounter particular challenges in breaking those barriers? Or do you feel like that was a space for you to just be viewed as a UVA student?
I think being a Black student necessitated my involvement. And again, it was a sense of taking ownership of the institution. I mean, whenever I talk to students, I always tell them, this is your university. You know, we were told, hey, you're going to the white university, right? That's what we all were told that at some point in our experience. And I said, no, it's a state university, which means it's my university, which means I have every much as right to be there and to leverage its resources, its opportunities, and its prestige as anyone else. And so we really had a huge consciousness in our generation that this is our institution and that we're going to take advantage of every resource that's available to us here. And so if you didn't do something, I mean, you were, I guess, in the early 90s, you were kind of stigmatized. If you weren't doing something, if you weren't involved in some organization, folks were like, you know, what's your problem? You know, you had to be making a contribution in some way to impact this place. And there was this real awareness. Now, again, we also were coming out of the ending of apartheid. So on Founders Day in 93, I spent that afternoon with a Black strap across my mouth protesting when Gorbachev was speaking, knowing that we had guns trained on us or whatever. But it was because, again, we just had this sense of consciousness that, you know, the world is changing and we got to be a part of it.
I think being a part of some of the other organizations and being a minority in them was a great opportunity. Again, I think a lot of the things that Carlos spoke to earlier, you know, were very relevant. There were many times where we could leverage some of the resources that we had, especially, I think, student council. I was highly involved there. We were able to do a number of different things and make some things happen just because we had the budget. Regardless of whether or not people wanted it to happen or, you know, we had even the bodies behind it. There were a lot of things that we were able to do, and we were able to change and influence because we were there. I think another piece was that during the time that I was there, we had a number of racial incidents. We had a lot of folks that were very unhappy, and I think the administration wasn't necessarily even sure how to engage the students. You know, students are very upset. There are all kinds of feelings flying, and, you know, being able to be one of the students that the administrators would look to work with the students was also a great opportunity. And I think it presented us with, you know, the chance to really speak our mind and do things in the right way, but, you know, really make our voices heard. So I think it's, you know, very positive, and it was a great opportunity.
Let me echo what my brother said in terms of budget. Where there is a budget, there's a program. You cannot influence the program. You can protest, and I did a lot of protesting. But when I was elected school-wide to be co-chair of Minority Cultures Committee, I had a $25,000 budget. We brought Phyllis Hyman here. We brought Pieces of a Dream, the first concerts for Black students in 3 years. Now, that's significant because I had the power and the pen and the dollars to say it will happen. Now, so let's advance the clock. It is about this time, about April 1st, and I have $3,000 left in my budget. The other university union committees were giving cake parties. I bought T-shirts. They were red, black, and green. On the front side, they said University of Virginia Rotunda, and it had 10 dots. Three were shaded. Minority Cultures Committee. On the back, it had a world atlas. 10 dots. Seven were shaded. Majority cultures. We are only a minority in this country by all sorts of immigration rules. But the world looks like us. And so they, University Union, protested my misappropriation of funds for the T-shirts. Notwithstanding the keg parties, okay? But it was the message that I was sending through the T-shirt, but by way of a budget. And it helps me, you know, segue into when some of you all will have children, and some are in the room, who will now enroll in University of Virginia. Once you are accepted, you are a shareholder in University of Virginia, Inc. And as such, you can petition the president, the board of trustees, because you are a shareholder. And for that membership, I mean, unless you do something really stupid, you're not going to flunk out. But you can go anywhere around the world. I just returned from Istanbul 6 months ago. There's a University of Virginia club there. So as a shareholder, which goes back to what Nick was saying, you have a vested interest in shaping how the university functions. But once again, you can't roll without the gold. So budget influences program.
I just want to reiterate the fact that I think maybe Maurice had said about making the university your own. Oh, I forgot who said it. Carlos too. A letter we received from the forerunner of the BSA, which was called Black Students for Freedom, back in 1968. They sent us a letter as new acceptees at UVA, and one of the last things in that letter, which was signed by John Charles Thomas and Lindsey Britt, said, "The University of Virginia is yours. Make it your own." So in our class, you might realize that there are a lot of firsts, but I remember somebody saying, and I think it was John Merchant, who was the first African-American law grad during a very horrible time in Virginia that Gary told you about, 1958. If you can imagine being at UVA and in law school, 1958, I can't imagine anything like that. But John said, there's no use being the first if there's no second, third, and fourth to follow. Yes. Yeah. And you all have done, I'm saying you all to any students or any alums that are after us, we just happened to be there and we learned from the people before us and you kept it going. I think that I'm amazed at the number of organizations I hear about today. And when you think about me being in a non-traditional sport such as field hockey, you may think I played that in high school because I went to integrated high school. No, I did not. I failed in field hockey in high school. I was having a bad day. But when I got here, nobody knew anything about anybody. So one of the questions I think Khalil might ask later is, what would you say about your time at UVA? I would say time of discovery, because I did not know I was an athlete until I got here. I'm tall. I didn't play basketball at all. And I'm not like Don Staley, where you can go on the court and tell the guys, get off, I'm here. Yeah, and then in Norfolk, that was not happening in the late 60s. So I say all this to say that UVA made me discover a lot about myself, and field hockey kind of came up because I was friends with somebody who knew it, and she said, come to this meeting and meet this person from Australia who's teaching the sport. The rest is history, and the team became a team. For basketball, I was involved as manager, and many people said, why is the manager so tall and not playing? But we started out as a club. They said, Paulette, you're organized, you're manager. Don't lose the real basketball. It costs $40. I said, okay, I won't lose it. But basically, getting involved in something like that for everybody in our class, if we couldn't find it, we tried to start it. And most of that would be, I think the things that started were definitely the fraternities and sororities and Black Voices and Muntu Dance Ensemble. But for you all that were particularly 80s and 90s, I kept hearing about new organizations every time I came to a reunion, and I'm just thrilled. So it's great. Thank you.
I was recruited to play center on the basketball team because I was 6'11 at the time that I entered, but Ralph Sampson was already here, and after my protest, and I whittled down to 5'10. So I too was a would-be athlete.
So we are moving toward time, and I want to make sure I get this out so we have appropriate time for the audience to participate. If you could think about what you know now that you wish you had known then, or what you wish someone had told you, so that we do have current students who are with us and even young alumni, what advice would you give them? Or what is that sort of information that you wish you had known during your time back then?
I think the most important thing that I learned here is that you can major in whatever you want, and for the most part, and still enter your career of choice. I think that I was a political and social thought major, and after school I went to Wall Street to do investment banking with Citigroup. I had a lot of help. There are a lot of people that taught me the things that I needed to learn and helped me with everything related to my career, but I think the resources are in place for you to take advantage of the opportunities that you have here to learn. And because of the name that we have here in the network, you can pursue what you want to pursue and still come out in the career of your choice.
I guess one thing that I wish I would have done was I would have stepped out of my comfort zone a little bit more while I was here. I went to majority white schools all my life, but UVA was different because I kept to the black community while I was here. And I just kind of wish that I would have gotten involved in organizations that weren't, solely focused on black students or minority students, just so that I could kind of like expand my horizons and meet people who weren't necessarily like me. Because really that's how the real world is. And it's funny, I work at a firm in DC, and three of the people in my hall who are also associates were all at UVA at the same time, that I was at UVA. And I had no clue, never saw them on campus. My summer sibling, when I was in New York, when she was a summer internship, she was at UVA the same time I was at UVA. And I was like, I would have never met them while I was here. And now they're like integral parts of my life, and we feed off of each other and we help each other out and we have great relationships, but I wish that while I was here I would have been able to develop those same relationships. So
yeah, I think I will echo that, but in the sense of maintaining, I was fortunate that I did develop a lot of relationships with other individuals that were not African American. But what I didn't do is I didn't maintain those relationships in the same way that I did with my other core friends. And I think as we see the way the world's developing and diversity is really kind of just mushrooming in every aspect of our lives, it's important to maintain and to realize some of those friends will be as reliable and as integral to you in your future. I'll tell you what, I ran for the House of Delegates 3 years ago. And when I was doing my fundraising, of course, they say, find anybody that you know, from college, law school, whatever, and you call them. And so I did that. And there were folks who I had known, some of my white colleagues, Asian colleagues that I'd known in undergrad, who I hadn't talked to in 10 years. And I called them, and they were some of the most generous supporters of my effort. And I'm like, wow, I feel really bad. I'm calling this person after 10 years. I haven't talked to him in 10 years. And, and they just stepped up and really showed in space. And I was like, I really did a disservice by not maintaining that relationship just in general. And I think that UVA affords an opportunity to do that, and we should take advantage of that.
I'm definitely in agreement with that. I just think I wish that I had known that really, we're in school, we're supposed to be learning. Everyone's very much pro-education, pro-study, all this stuff. But really, when you get out into the world, you really need to have some broad breadth of education and knowledge. But the reality is you need to know people. You need to know how to interact with people. And so, I was very social, so I didn't really have issues with that. But what I wish I had done was, I wish I had had a realization of how important networking was when I was in school. I didn't really get that until I got, probably until law school, because I had taken 2 years off to work. So I'd been in corporate America, and then I went back to law school. By the time I got in law school, I realized how important networking was. And so as I'm navigating through classes, I'm also talking to people and figuring out how to make connections with them and how to maintain relations with them. And I have a lot of great relationships with people I went to law school with, black, white, everything. From undergrad, I kind of like Consuelo, I was kind of centered in the black community, but I did kind of reach out because, I don't know, I was on student council too, so I did reach out and I used to hang on Rugby Road and do all kinds of different things, but not as much as I probably would have done had I known what I know now.
I have several, but I'll be succinct, okay? I really regret not having studied abroad as an undergrad. I had the opportunity to study at the University of Sevilla in Spain. And I was so concerned about the parties I would miss and the friends I would miss that I allowed that opportunity, or I permitted that opportunity to go by. And I encourage all of the students with whom I work and assist to take advantage of every opportunity that is presented to you as an undergraduate student. The undergraduate years are like no other, as we all know. A second thing, not working at my full potential. I could have done better. I really believe, you know, and this is, you know, a statement of self-assuredness and not arrogance, but I really do believe I could have graduated here Phi Beta Kappa. But I allowed myself to, you know, turn off the button, you know, with my studies and everything. At times when, I allowed the button to stay on, rather, at times when I should have turned it off. And third, I really regret not knowing the story and the history of Alice Jackson Stewart, mm-hmm. the first African-American to apply to the university back in 1935. She, as Gary mentioned earlier, was paid by the Commonwealth of Virginia. Well, I should say her tuition and everything was paid by the Commonwealth of Virginia to go to Columbia, mm-hmm. as opposed to having her enroll at UVA. I had the very distinct pleasure of living in one of the high-rise complexes in Richmond, and Jackson Stewart was a resident. And one day we were in the lobby, and, you know, it was my first time seeing her, and she struck a conversation. She started a conversation, and she asked me where I attended college, and I said the University of Virginia with pride. And she said, in a very distinguished voice, like Mr. Ridley, Dr. Ridley, Dean Terry, "Do you know who I am?" And I, being dumbfounded and not knowing who she was, exclaimed no. And she said, "Read some history about the University of Virginia." And I found out that she was the first African American to indeed apply back in 1935. So my point is, know the history. You don't have to be a historian, but know at least the basics. Black History UVA 101, okay?
I may have to take some credit for, dubiously, for Maurice's partying. I was one of the dormitory advisors in summer prep,
yes.
And I have strong partying credentials. I'm unapologetic on that. And so I apologize. So one would be party less, study more. But one of the regrets I had is I did not hang out with professors outside of my discipline as much as I should have. And I was elated to read in the Washington Post a month ago that you can now, as a student, have a mini seminar with a professor outside of your discipline and just talk about that subject. And I think the curious mind, as Jefferson wanted us to have, compels us to seek knowledge everywhere. And so I don't think I did that enough because I was partying or politicking. I mean, either I was protesting or partying. Yeah, I did a lot of protesting too, strong credentials there. But we changed the university. And so I would advise the students who are here now, get involved in the program that was mentioned in the Washington Post about sitting down with professors outside of your discipline, because I think that is enriching. And as Indy said, as you come into the corporate world, you know, whether it's a black side or the white side or both, the more knowledge you have, the more you're conversant. And so no knowledge is useless. And so I would encourage that.
I think I may have already mentioned, maybe I don't say it's a regret, but I think maybe my recommendation, the idea of, at that time, many of us as black students were a little bit timid about our intelligence. We knew that we knew something. We knew we were intelligent. And the majority of the black students entering the fall of 70 were valedictorians of all their schools. Now, their schools were not the boarding schools of the Northeast or anything, or that you may not have been the famous schools, but they all knew something. We all knew something. But I think we were right at that time where we felt, okay, this is the time to be proud to be black. It's time to be proud to be at UVA because we're here. But then it was a little bit frightening and intimidating for many. And it wasn't in every class. I couldn't say that for every student in the class or for every class that I had, that intimidation felt there. And I cannot say that the professors didn't want us there. There might have been one or two, in fact there were, that made it known by either their body language or their maybe not calling on you or something. But that happened to certain students and to some women, but not every day. It was something you had to kind of speak up for. And I think maybe if there's a thing that I'd say regret, maybe just to speak up, you know, and not to be arrogant about it, but to speak up. And if you know something, go for it. And don't be afraid to speak up, intellectually or otherwise. So I'll keep it short so we have time for questions.
We have two microphones that will go. I think there's a young woman behind you. You could, right. Of course. If you could go first, and then we'll have another mic on this side of the room.
Thank you for the wonderful panel. I was curious with your reflection back to current students, why there was no conversation around being a Greek, fraternities and sororities. When I was in school, class of 82, most of the leaders on campus were in fraternities and sororities. And I know, Gary, you can speak to that as well, but it seems to be a change on predominantly white campuses in terms of the Greek life. Thank you.
Well, I think that is a good analysis. I think it's generational. I mean, there are less fraternities, membership in fraternities and sororities at HBCUs now. And I don't necessarily agree with it, because I think that the grade point average that you have to enter, the organizational skills that are nurtured are transferable to the working world. But I mean, a lot of my friends' children are saying, you know, I'm an individual. Why do I need to pledge a fraternity or sorority? You know, it's useless. But the benefit is organizational acumen. And so knowing how to run a meeting with Robert's Rules of Order seems to be basic, but if you don't know it, you don't know it. And so you're in now a board meeting at your corporation, and you cannot challenge the motion on the floor because you don't even know what the heck is going on. So I would say, please consider joining Greek letter organizations or joining an organization that gives you that experience to then parlay into the you know, broader world. I was president of Omega when I was here, but as such, I got to serve on the Council of Presidents. That means I had another direct shot at the president of the university. And by such, I I was able to learn organizational behavior at a University of Virginia, Inc., at a major corporation. So at times I protested. At times I organized behind the scenes so that when the votes went down, I already counted my votes. That's a valuable lesson to learn. And many times it starts not only with the Greek letter organization, but with other organizations that teach you the skills to how to negotiate in a room. I remember Ernest Earn was the provost at the time. We were protesting for more black faculty and more black students and more black programming. And I remember raising my voice in the meeting, and Regina Clay remembers this. Dean Harris, and I apologized to Dean Harris, he's the Dean of African American Studies. I said, "Dean, I'm sorry for raising my voice." You know, I didn't get unruly, but I just kind of got, you know, loud. And he said, "Flowers, never lose your passion. Learn how to surgically apply your passion at the right time." He said, "So keep the passion in the belly." And that was a great lesson for me dealing with board members now. I don't have to blow them up and put them on blast in the meeting. I'm counting my votes before we get in. And I'm doing the homework. And I think, so thank you for bringing that up.
Consuelo. Yeah, I was a member. I pledged Kappa Rho in spring 2001, chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. And I was also chapter president. And I think it was one of the best things I ever did in life. Just the amount of amazing women that I met through the chapter and the relationships I developed helped me become the woman that I am today. And it's not only the involvement in the university community, but involvement with each other and getting to know each other. I mean, my chapter sores are like my strongest network. When I was applying to law school, they helped me revise my law school application. They helped me look for jobs. I mean, it's just been great. And what I learned through Delta about hard work and dedication has also helped me out along the way. I mean, some of the things that I learned from Delta, I mean, it helped me out in studying for law school and actually, like, when you feel like you couldn't do it anymore, you still knew that there was something left in you to keep you pushing. And I mean, I too encourage, you know, if you're a current student, I mean, I kind of feel like Black Greek life was dying when I was at school, so I can only imagine what's going on now. But I mean, it's definitely a great experience.
I just want to add, I pledged Kappa Rho Delta Sigma Theta in spring of 91, so many years before Consuelo. But in addition to it providing, like being Greek, providing you with some kind of benefits, we also provide a lot of benefits to the university community. When I was here, I was the social chair of our chapter. And I mean, if it wasn't for the Black Greeks, we wouldn't have had any social things to do. You know, we had parties regularly. We had cue balls, Kappa cabarets. You know, there was always a formal to go to. And I mean, you know, UVA in the early 90s, like late 80s, early 90s, like people up and down the East Coast were coming here to do social things. So not only was everyone, we were all very, very academic, right? But we also had a good time. And I mean, it was arguably people would come here to UVA to do stuff instead of going to Hampton. I mean, I'm saying like the people from Hampton were road tripping to UVA because we had all these awesome events. And I think that the Black Greek community, aside from, we also did a lot of service and a lot of other programs, and we were very involved in the university community, but we did provide a social framework for the Black community here.
And also, let me just add parenthetically that the Black Greek system gives you a sense of accountability. Your brothers and your sorors will call you out. So, you know, if you are slacking, it's no tolerance. In times of grief, I recite poems that I learned. No, for real. It's not corny. I mean, for real. Out of the night that covers me. Black as a pit from pole to pole. I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced,
nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. And yet, the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I'm the captain of my soul.
Is a very proud member of right. We see all the Greek signs. Is a very proud member of the Theta Kappa chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated, Spring 97. It's been very good for that. Other questions or comments from our audience?
Can I just say, as someone who is a proud UVA alum who never pledged, the black Greek theater program presence and life is a source of pride for those of us who never joined but joined in with you. And it's just part of the dimension of this school that belongs to us.
So Indy mentioned the social contribution, but also the service. Because I think those organizations were one of the few organizations that actually went into the Charlottesville community and said, let's break down those town-gown relations and think about these broader issues. Other questions?
Service.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. That's right.
I don't think the word service is pronounced as it should be. You know, it's like, oh, you were in a black fraternity or sorority. And I think that those of us who are members have to recalculate and re-promote ourselves. We had to do a service project every Saturday.
Right.
If you didn't do the service project, it was hell to pay. I mean, it was just not an option not to do. And so I think... particularly for our white colleagues who join Greek letter organizations, it's pretty much, you know, an I was. For black Greeks, it is I am.
I am.
I'm 48 years old and can still hop for about 4 minutes.
Okay.
I can't give you a full show for 45 minutes, but I can give you 4 minutes of thunder.
Gentlemen on my right hand side, very last question or comment, please.
Yeah, I think we actually looked at this issue because after finishing undergrad, I went to the law school. And so I was able to kind of look back and see what was happening on Central Grounds in that period. And what we found, and we did kind of a little informal longitudinal study with some of the Dean Terrys and others, was that it goes in cycles, right? You know, when there's a crisis situation, when someone's getting shot at on the corner or called a racial epithet, then the student body tends to mobilize to social action. And it's not that academics were neglected because, you know, I was disappointed to find out, I talked to Dean Davis just last year, that last year there was only one or no African-Americans with intermediate honors, whereas when I was here, there were a significant number of us who got intermediate honors and who were Eccles and who were in the Raven Society and so forth. But we were also the activists. And I think for those of us that were the activists, we knew we had to do both, right? Because the thing that I think we were told by either Dean Turner or Dean Terry, I can't remember which one, was that you can't go into Castine's office demanding anything if your grades aren't in order. And so we took all of that into consideration. So I'm not sure it's really an either or, but I do think that when there isn't a crisis, there are periods when the university has become more social. And typically it rebounds because things get lax and we come back around. I want to say something else about the Greek life and about the role that Greeks played on grounds. UVA's system and culture is designed for the students, and particularly the fraternities and sororities, to provide the social outlets. I remember having this debate with Dean Canterbury during the mid-90s because he did not think it was his role as Dean of Students to provide social forms and social activities because Rugby Road did it. And so absent our Greek letter organizations, our service fraternities and sororities, we wouldn't have those outlets. I mean, there was the U Union and they did what they would, but the reality was the university's position was it is the students' responsibility to develop their social outlets, and if they don't do it, they won't have any. So it is very true that our Greek letter organizations were the pillar, and I know this. I'm on the board of another university here in Virginia, Board of Visitors of another university, and it's a younger university that is actively recruiting African American fraternities and sororities trying to charter chapters for that exact reason. And every board meeting in the Student Life Committee, we get a report on how many fraternities and sororities we've been able to recruit, whether there's a development of a chapter, because it ties you to the institution, it provides a social outlet. Many of those who come back, why? Because they want to see their sororities or their frat brothers and sisters. So that's why folks, that's how you develop a linkage. And so it is very important. And so it's important to understand that.
But also, I think there's a lesson to be learned at the University of Virginia that we can then project to our working world. And it's this. Whereas the fraternities and sororities may provide and have provided a social outlet, it is the student activities fee that every student pays that compels the university to provide activities. At the time I was a student, it was $16. Per student. Now, the white students had 5 radio stations. They had concerts every month. They had lectures every month. So we had the temerity to say to the president, our parents or we are paying $16 and we're not getting $16 worth of benefit. Now, here's the lesson for the broader world today. There are those in the Tea Party who would assert that the federal government is not responsible for providing anything for citizens. I would say the University of Virginia, as a microcosm of the federal government, owes black students because we pay $16 or whatever the fee is now. But the federal government owes us as African Americans because we pay taxes. So that's another lesson that you learn at UVA if you study the composition of corporations and how corporations run America.
So I'm going to ask that you join me in thanking our panelists for a wonderful discussion. I want to again recognize Javonna Braxton and Cecil Banks for their work in making this happen, and thank all of you as well. We all know now what it means to have worn the honor of all honors. And I hope that for our students, our current students who are here, we look forward to hearing from you in the afternoon about what black student life is currently like on grounds. I hope this conversation will continue not just this weekend, but indeed beyond Black Alumni Weekend, so we can continue telling our stories, archiving, and sharing those stories. So enjoy the rest of your weekend, and thank you.